Okay, so we're not live
Love
yet. Don't worry about
radio.
It. Okay, but now we could be live as soon as we say. So I'm going to mention two things. All right. One is I'm a fairly good historical scholar of social services, and something like Chicago Scots probably did start out only for Scots, and now is everybody who, as you say, has an inclination of being Scottish. So
yep.
We might at some point talk about the evolution of senior care, which really did start from individual churches and individual groups, and now is much, much more wide and ecumenical. So that's,
yep.
That wouldn't be the first thing we talk about, but we will. And the other is, I don't know if you know this, but do you know that the UK, which and certainly with Scotland as well, has a national policy on longevity and we don't?
Yeah.
Because I've been working on that with UK people, and it's pretty embarrassing, I have to tell you, for us.
Yeah, Nicola Sturgeon in particular in Scotland, but there are several government ministers and people from the fields of academia and services, aging services themselves, who have put their shoulders to the wheel and come up with policies on aging and making sure that it's done with respect and grace and all the things that we need in our field.
Right. So we may end up, say, getting a little international just because of who you are, all right?
Cool.
And your organization.
Delighted. Yeah.
Okay, very, very good. So we're going to start now. Stuart, are we doing music now? Yeah, you're going to hear music, then I'm going to introduce the show, I'm going to introduce you. And my first question is going to be, honestly, is going to be, how'd you do it? Okay? I'll set it up. Yeah. All right. Now, at the end of this segment, which is about 9 minutes, I'll know it's over. You won't. So if you hear me say interrupt you or something, it's only because I don't want you to get cut off, and we'll continue to the next segment after a couple of minutes off the air where we could talk. Stuart,
sure.
We are ready.
Okay. So I'll start.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Do you believe in miracles? Well, if you don't believe in miracles, you must listen to this show, because we're going to be speaking with Gus Noble, and he's going to be telling you the story of the Caledonia Senior Living and Memory Care Center, run by the Chicago Scots. We'll tell you all about that and their fascinating 175-year background. But he's going to tell you about a miracle, and that is a miracle of an organization, a senior residence, that had no resident cases of COVID-19 throughout the pandemic. Now, it really is an incredible story. It's a story you haven't heard anywhere else unless you happen to be associated with Caledonia Senior Living. And it's almost impossible. As you know, I've moved from New Jersey to California. I'm here in an environment where people are off the streets. I'm living myself in a very large community of over 330 people. But we are consistently getting announcements that somebody has COVID in the community. And this is a fairly well-developed, careful community. How do you do something like this in an assisted living environment when no one else could? It's very important. And for those of you who have parents, relatives, loved ones that might be going now or thinking about going into such a community and really need to, but have decided not to because of the COVID scare, this is information that you really, really need and you wouldn't get anywhere else. I also will be announcing new free, always free, webcasts, a conference coming up on your own personal longevity, useful for anybody at any age, including folks who are now in college. I'll tell you all about that. But right now I want to delve into this, what I think is a miraculous story, as I've been talking to people who are running nursing homes and running assisted livings and senior facilities all over the country. So thank you, Gus, for being with us today. And I think people want to know, I told you off the air, I was going to say, how did you do it? How did you make this happen?
Well, thank you for having me, Adrian, and thank you for your question. I hope that everybody listening is well and finding reasons to be healthy and happy during these challenging times. Your question is a very good one, and honestly, it's one that we've asked ourselves consistently as time has marched by, and we're now almost 10 months deep into this crisis. I think there are many different answers to the question, and if I could, I'll tackle a few of those today. We went into a meeting when we realized that the crisis of COVID-19 was going to be as impactful as it was on lives all over our community, the community of support and the community within the walls of our physical campus. And the administrator here, who is a remarkable woman called Chris Cortez, sat almost zen-like in a meeting when the world seemed to be panicked, confused, and full of the unknown. She went into this kind of very quiet, intentional moment, and we went round the room in our conference room and took each department one by one and said, what do we need to do? What do you need to do as we take this campus into an extreme lockdown like it's never been locked down before? The key went into the 104-year-old doors here at the Scottish Home at Caledonia Senior Living and locked them for the first time in their history. That was quite a moment. But as we went round the room, Chris suddenly broke her silence. And whether these are her own words or whether she, as she's very generous, she's attributed them to several other people. But she said, if we overreact to this crisis, we will probably never know. But if we underreact, we will know immediately. And I looked around the room, and all of our managers, I saw light bulbs going above all their heads. And it snapped us all into lockstep as we did what we had to do to bring the campus into this extreme lockdown. It was an important statement I heard that took us into lockdown, but its true value I recognized would come as we actually moved out of lockdown. The people who live and work at Caledonia Senior Living, you'll hear me talk about them a lot over the next little while, because they are literally the reason we are in this wonderful position of having an impeccable record of success, of having no residents that have or have had COVID-19. And I say this touching wood, and I've never touched as much wood in my life or knocked on as much wood in my life. But I recognize the power of that statement beyond lockdown. Everybody understood and therefore agreed and supported the move into this extreme lockdown. That arguably was the easy work. The hardest work we knew was when we would come out of that and begin to embrace the world and return to some sense of engagement with normal life, such as that it has been over the last few months. And the reason I kind of hearken back to the importance of that statement is we needed a North Star that we would all hitch our particular wagons to, that would drag us along at the same speed and have the same frame of reference, because we recognized that motivations throughout the campus would be different and throughout society at large. The White House wanted a different speed of opening than Springfield. Our board wanted a different speed than management. Families wanted a different way of opening than staff or residents. Then you layer on COVID-19 fatigue, and those motivations become very different.
People want it all over with. That's, you know, and we're all experiencing that, by the way. Your story is almost a parallel to everybody's individual life. It seems to be lifting, and we want to go faster. So how did you get that North Star? And before you answer that, I have one the question that's on my mind. When was that first meeting when you heard that wonderful phrase saying, let's overreact? Do you remember what month that was?
That was March. It was
March.
March the 9th or 10th. And I say that because I then recorded a video that was a message to our community of support, our donors, our families, our members at the Scottish Society, to really deliver a message that we could get through this. And I had an important message that I delivered that day on March the 10th.
Right, so it's a memorable day. You know, a reason I asked this question, we're going to talk about how you got that North Star, because we may all need that right now, whether we're in a community or not. I asked that question because I wanted everybody to understand how quickly you had a meeting that recognized the crisis. I personally was in Argentina in January. I didn't get back to the United States until February 8th. And it was very important because when I got back here, I had no idea there was COVID. It came to Argentina, to South America, much later. I came in. I was on an airplane. I had no mask. I had no issues. I had nothing. It took about 10 days to even know that there was a pandemic, and there was a pandemic already by that time. So please remember for everyone, recognition of this, acknowledgement of it, and acceptance of it as a big deal is part of the answer to how you did it. When we come back, I want to talk about that North Star, because that's what's going on right now. People wanting it to be over, and even careful people demanding seeing their relatives faster and so on. We'll talk about that as soon as we can. Don't go anywhere. This is an important part of our lives, whether we have somebody in assisted living, nursing home, or ourselves trying to rush through the next phase of this pandemic. Don't go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da.
Okay, so we are off, but we're going right back on, and
sure,
we're going to start with this issue. I loved what you called the North Star, and I will say a little bit about the organization, though, and then also give your URL, and then go back to you, okay?
Fine. Terrific.
Okay, so we have the same around nine minutes. Go ahead, Stu. We're ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and welcome back. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Now, a few bookkeeping ideas right now for you, and that is, how about my book? A very easy way to get a copy of my book, which is The Retirement Income Explosion, everything you need to know because you're going to be living longer and you want to be able to afford it, you can get by joining our newsletter, and it is always free. Go right ahead to adrianberg.com, adrianeberg.com, and you'll see a little pop-up there, and you can be part of our newsletter family, which comes to you every single Monday with hints and tips on successful aging, offers for wonderful webcasts. We had one today on mitochondria, and that is the strength sheaths around your cells and what you can do to even strengthen it more, and so many things. Today I just booked one of our wonderful guests who were with us before on travel opening up after COVID. Now, which brings me actually to my present guest, Gus Noble. Now, he's been telling us an amazing, miraculous story about what happened at Caledonia Senior Living. And if you're interested, if you happen to be in the Illinois area, or if you just want to see a model residence for seniors and assisted living, take a look at CaledoniaSeniorLiving.org. You all write to me and you all say, you know, I have a parent or a loved one that needs some help, may want to move. What should I be asking? What's the model? What's the state of the art? Well, take a look at CaledoniaSeniorLiving.org. When you do that, you're going to see an organization that is one of the oldest, actually, in Illinois, and was spawned by Chicago Scots, 175-year-old organization, starting in 1845. And yet, the thinking is more than up to date. So this is something to understand. I want to go back to Gus, who said and explained that one of the reasons there was no COVID, not even one case, among their residents, started with the fact that they took it very seriously, and they decided that it'd be better to overreact than underreact. But now, as things are lifting, what Gus has said to us, and I think we feel this in our own life, it's actually getting harder to be as safe. We'd like to get rid of some of the better habits we had. You know, it's like Thanksgiving. We want to eat a big meal. So Gus, how are you keeping the lid on, which is really what's going on there now? How has that happened?
That's a great question, too. You know, what we've been talking about up to now is kind of a philosophical commitment that we made, an investment in the philosophy of taking this seriously and so on. And the message that we delivered was, you know, this is an organization that has always delivered on life's most important things, and that's home and family and love, ever since 1845. And that's helped us get through the Civil War, two world wars, the Great Chicago Fire, the Great Depression, and the 1918 flu, by staying true to who we are. And as I said in this message, that's exactly what we're going to do, and that's how we will get through this. So our commitment and our investment in the philosophy was important. As we went into lockdown and as we have come out very slowly in various very cautious ways of the most extreme lockdown, we made an investment in, of course, as everyone did, in PPE. And in the days when it was short, I reached out to every network that we have. The sense that we're all in this together became very palpable within our community of Scots and supporters and residents and family. And I asked my board if they could look inside their own networks to help us find PPE. And so it was that we were able to secure KN95 masks, which we have worn every single member of staff, and anybody that steps across the threshold of our building must wear a KN95 or an N95 mask. We were able to get all the PPE we needed, the hand sanitizer, and we made sure that everybody observed the three things that we've all become doing by rote now: washing our hands, keeping our distance, and wearing our masks. We made an investment in PPE and technology. We realized that now that our doors were closed for the first time in 104 years, we needed a way to screen people as they came through those doors. And like everybody, we had a questionnaire. We took our temperatures using one of the handheld digital thermometers and so on, and became concerned that the point of greatest risk for the community in any shape or form of any community is the point of ingress and egress as the outside world engages with the inside world.
Right.
And so we invested in technologies to make that particular process as touchless as possible, from a keypad so we would know securely who's coming in and who's leaving the building at any given time. We know exactly what the people who are in the building, who they are and where they are. We have a system which runs the screening process and takes temperatures with no touch. We invested in bipolar air cleaning, the ionization on our heat pumps. We have a disinfection fogging system that we use routinely as we go through the campus. All of this is kind of finite and easy to point at, but it all happens within the campus. And I realized that the biggest point of weakness, or rather my management team and I realized that the biggest point of weakness that we have is not actually in the campus at all. It's outside the campus as our staff are outside in the world leading their own lives.
That was my question. You know, they do have lives, and they have to be personally so responsible. Mm. And that, I think, partially does come with leadership. But is there anything else other than the fact that they really cared and that you created this atmosphere of caring?
Yes, I made a commitment to each and every single one of the staff personally. I met with them all, and I said, let's just recognize something. The best way to ensure you do not spread the virus is not to get the virus in the first place. So I am making a commitment to you that I will look after my own safety. I'm asking you personally to make the same commitment to Gus, and then the two of us shall make that commitment to our colleagues and the residents. And we went round the whole campus and did the same thing. We have weekly meetings of staff. All staff meet together, and I spend a few moments giving them the truth, giving them in a transparent way what reports I can give to make them as informed as possible. It could be a report on the incidence of numbers, and you know, today I told them that yesterday we passed the 1 million mark in Illinois for having positive cases of COVID, and we have recently passed the 17,000 fatalities number. But I also take on other subjects. And when George Floyd was murdered, I said to the black and brown members of our team, I want you to recognize that the world outside, or recognize with me, the world outside these doors may be cruel and unjust and unequal, but the world inside these locked doors, as the president of this organization, I have some jurisdiction over. And I'm here to tell you that this is a world where Black Lives Matter, where the people who live and work here will be dignified and everyone is equal. That's one of our core values. And I invited anybody who did not subscribe to those values to walk through the door. That allowed me to connect to people. And I did. I also recognize that as a white man, I do not have the lived, the shared, or the ancestral experience of our staff. But I want to empathize and to support them in their lives as much as possible. Now, the
because we have to take a little bit of a break, but I want to bring this to the fore. First of all, we've talked many times about organizations of all types, and one of the things we talk about is a code of honor. And it sounds to me like you were applying that, and that was a huge, I mean, you wouldn't think of it automatically, but that was a huge step that one does not consider when they think about what should we do about COVID, is that if all the staff feel a code of honor that goes from top to bottom, it makes a huge difference. And the second thing is that nobody's living this COVID in a vacuum. We're all living it within a world that has other things that are impinging on ourselves and the way we think about ourselves and how we're taking care of ourselves. So it's kind of a brilliant move, but it probably comes out of the philosophy of the organization. So when we come back, I want to talk to you about this shift that we've had in assisted living and nursing homes from what were very based upon people's individual cultures to now a little bit clinical, and homogenous. Good thing or bad thing? Well, I don't know. We'll be back in just a minute.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, so when we come back, I do want to broach this, but I do know that you were going to say you're going to finish up with one more item, and I don't want to let that hanging. What was that, so I could get it in?
It's kind of a cute story, but it speaks to it brings everything together. I realized I needed to live in the community, to be seen by the residents and staff, to be here at every hour of the day. And the best thing I did all summer was I bashed my thumb with a hammer, and my thumb went black and blue. And everybody says, why do you say that's the best thing you did all summer? Because it's an instant conversation starter, and the conversation is not about COVID. It links people in a way that shows, this is what I did with my weekend. I was fixing my deck. What did you do with yours? And I really felt a bond with all of my colleagues as a result.
Good. I think I can make that part of my first question that I will be sharing with you.
Okay.
It's not a question you won't, that you need to know because you know all the answers. So, okay, I'm ready to go, Stuart, and we're ready. Go ahead.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we're having here a very intimate conversation about something that is a global issue. I'm speaking today with Gus Noble, and he is the president of CaledoniaSeniorLiving.org. He is the one responsible for making sure that the health of the entire organization, the people, the staff, the equipment is always top-notch. But what he's been able to do, and the reason that he's on the show today, and there are hundreds and hundreds of operators and major executives of many, many assisted livings and nursing homes all over the country, is that there were no reported residential cases of COVID-19. And that is miraculous. Now, this is an organization that is not born yesterday. It's been around for 110 years. This particular organization, and it was actually started by a larger charity in 1845. So they have a lot of background. And as you already heard from Gus, if you were listening, they lived through world wars. They lived through the Chicago fire. But they did not take this as something that you could just take in stride. Number one, they took it very seriously and agreed to overreact rather than underreact. Number two, they fought some battles from what was expected of them by Washington, by their local governments, by perhaps the family members, to accelerate the opening of doors. They didn't do that. They fought that. And they also made sure that their staff understood that as they go out into the world, they have a responsibility to everybody, a code of honor. And, of course, they used age technology, which not every group did. Now, I'm bringing up two things to you, Gus. Number one, I don't think people realize how hard this is to do. There is something in hospitals called MRSA, which is infections that people get in hospitals. And 90% of it can be stopped if all the staff wash their hands. That's all. And yet, there's constant deaths because of MRSA. Even just washing hands. Now, you were able to get people to do a lot more than that. They wore their masks inside, out into the community. They washed their hands like you're supposed to with regard to this for 20 seconds. They did all the things they were supposed to do. When in most organizations in healthcare, you can't even get people to wash their hands when they go from patient to patient. Now, you told a little story to me that about connecting, and that may be the difference. That may be the reason. So let everybody hear that story.
It was in April. I decided that one of the things I needed to do was move into the community. One of the motivations was to stop footfall, to lessen the traffic coming in and out of the building. If it was one less pair of feet, then all to the good. But really, I wanted residents and staff to see me here every hour of the day, and I wanted to see the world through the eyes of the people who live and work here during those hours. The best thing I did all summer, as I say to everyone, is I whacked my thumb with a hammer fixing the deck on the back of my house in Chicago. And people say to me, why on earth do you say that's the best thing you did? And I say, because my thumb went black and blue, and it is an instant conversation starter, and the conversation becomes about something other than COVID or stress or the madness of the world. It's how on earth did you do that to your thumb? And here's what I did with my weekend. I fixed my deck. What did you do with yours? Well, I watched my son did this, did that, did the other, and it becomes a much more personal connection. And I am convinced that it helped foster the spirit that, the recognition that we're all in this together and everybody plays an equal role in keeping this community safe.
So the responsibility was felt. Now, I'm going to relate this to something that I'm a student of, and very few people are, and that is the history of what we would call social service organizations. And yours is the second that I've had the privilege to speak with that really began in the heyday of this idea that there was charitable responsibility for others. And I think that the idea for the original charity that runs this, Chicago Scots, was relieve the distressed. That's what you have in your organizational branding. Relieve the distressed. So a time came when people did not have Social Security. They didn't have Medicare. They didn't have Medicaid. And they relied on their churches. They relied on their synagogues. They relied on community organizations only. And I would assume that this is kind of the background of Chicago Scots. I would say that the Scottish community in Chicago needed help, and some were distressed. And this is 1845 we're talking about. And so you were catering at that time, the birth of this organization was extremely local, and it wasn't broadened. It was for a certain group of people. Now, that's no longer the case. And new organizations today, or assisted living, senior communities, is never the case. They're never associated. They are profit-making organizations or even nonprofits, but they are for everybody. Now, are you seeing that certain values are being lost? I don't want to put words in your mouth, maybe yes, maybe no. Certain values are lost because of the historic origins of these compared to, let's say, those that was started as charitable organizations. Do you think that there's something to learn on both sides? What's your take on it as somebody who's really in the business of senior living?
That's a great question, and it's one that I've studied, like you, a lot over the years, but never more than as of the 30th of November 2020. And the reason I say that is because that was St. Andrew's Day, the day we were started in 1845. So that date was our 175th anniversary, and we, of course, we'd usually have a great black tie celebration, which is the oldest, longest-running black tie dinner in the city of Chicago, with bagpipes and haggis and whiskey and all the Scottish stuff. But COVID-19 put an end to any of those plans. However, we decided that there was an opportunity to tell the story of the history and the evolution of this great organization. And so I went back to the very spot on the very day where the charity and when the charity was started, but on the banks of the Chicago River, very near where the Wrigley Building now stands.
Right.
And
oh, well.
I raised a glass of whiskey, don't tell CPD, but I raised a toast and recognized that 175 years after, here we are. Now, yes, the Scots started the first charity in Illinois. There was no other service group or government program or charity to serve the community of Scots. So we had to do everything for everyone. And to make good on that mission, relieve the distressed, they identified a purpose. And that was that in a very visionary way, this group of Scots committed to a written purpose. They wrote it down almost like a mission statement of sorts, that no deserving Scot in need would go without food, shelter, medical attention, or be buried in a potter's field. They were doing everything for everyone in the community. As the years wore on, various government programs and churches and service groups took care of elements of that big and broad and bold mission, and we began to focus on two things: the celebration of Scottish culture and elder care. Now, through those years, as we drew those focus, we took our service to Scots in Chicago wherever we found them. And in the years between 1845 and 1910, we decided that we should have a place that becomes the focus of the community, the focal point. And rather than us as an organization take service to to the needy where we find them, the needy will come to us, giving us the ability to do more with less and serve more people. So we rented a brownstone walk-up building in the south side of Chicago, very close to where the White Sox now play, and the building became filled. Very, very quickly, the area became overcrowded, and one of our board members gave us, or rather sold us, a very, very, very deep discount, close to a donation, 5 acres of land way out in the middle of nowhere. That's where I now sit. And we built the first Scottish home. And here was a turning point. 1910, we opened the home. 1917, on St. Patrick's Day, the two dogs who lived here, Topsy and McDougal, ran around barking after they smelled a fire burning in the basement of the building. And the administrator at the time, Cora Cummings, whose initial CC our current administrator Chris Cortez now has, Cora Cummings raised the alarm with the dogs, waking the residents, evacuated all of them to safety. Unfortunately, four of them were lost in the fire, as well as one of the dogs.
Again, Gus, we're going to take a little bit of a break now for our last segment. But
okay.
It sounds to me like you're almost duplicating that time in 1917 of rescue. And by saying that today, you didn't have to rescue anybody because they didn't have a problem. COVID-19, not one case in Caledonia Senior Living. We will be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, now I know it's hard to believe, but we're at the last segment, okay? And before we finish, I just want to know, of course, we'll continue. That same question, I'll pose it to you again, but is there anything else that you want to get out? Because this really is the last chance.
Yeah.
Or have you covered everything?
Where I was headed there was the board after the fire got together around the dying embers of the fire, and the chairman made a statement which really pivoted our organization to become one that serves not just Scots, but everybody. There was a statement that defined being Scottish in terms of a commitment to values and inclination, as well as birth and heritage. And that's really the point at which we became an organization that retains those values.
So I have just one quick question, because I don't want to ask it to you on the air if you don't want to discuss it. And that is, do people who are not Scottish feel comfortable? Are you getting more and more people? And I must admit, maybe more because of this situation than ever before.
They do. I mean, you walk into the Scottish home and it's got tartan carpets and pictures of burns, and you know, it feels very, very Scottish by design. But only a small percentage, maybe 10% of the people who are here have some type of Scottish heritage.
Most of them
just feel comfortable in a family-like
environment. Okay, got it. Okay, we are ready, and let's go, Stu.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Now, this morning, we had a wonderful geroscience conference. It lasted about 2 hours. And another half hour or so with other geroscientists asking questions about mitochondria. And if you don't know what mitochondria is, I'm not surprised, because most people know about it only if they are ill. And right now our care system focuses on cures of people that already have some kinds of morbid problems. It doesn't focus on prevention. And I am very thrilled to be the executive director of a nonprofit that focuses on prevention of the diseases of aging so that they don't come upon us in the first place. And we are recently doing studies even with college kids. So this is not an issue for old people. It's not about being old. It's about the process of aging. And every single week I get a chance to send you, free of charge, a little newsletter that has some very important information that I can't share on the radio or in my articles, but I can give you little hints and tips on successful longevity and aging from the health point of view, the fun point of view, the financial point of view. To get the free newsletter, you just go to my website, Adrienne Berg, ADRIANEBERG.com, and you'll get that in your email every single Monday free of charge. You will also get invitations to webcasts, always free, like the one we had today. We had 241 people from all over the world attending, and five stellar geroscientists talking about mitochondria and what you can do to strengthen it. Fascinating stuff. And we'll have another one at the end of this month and another one in February. So please, if you want to have information about this, you can't get it anywhere else. That's Adrienne, ADRIANEBERG.com. Now, in our last segment of our show, we're doing something very unusual today. We're speaking with Gus Noble, who is the president of an organization that really was started in 1845, then as a charity for Scots in Chicago, very narrow kind of community, but very needy at that time. Among other things, was granted some land, built a Caledonia Senior Living community, which you can find at caledoniaseniorliving.org, was one of the very few, maybe the only in the country, that had absolutely no residential cases of COVID-19. Gus has made it clear to us that it came because they took it seriously, they used the technology that was necessary for health care, and they created an atmosphere of mutual responsibility. But I asked him a tough question. And that was, this is Scott, but not anymore. How do you move from being basically a charity for a needy community to a fairly beautiful, you know, I would say more than fairly beautiful, a desirable senior residence for everybody? And where we left him was when their first facility had actually burnt down, and they decided they're going to open for all. And before I let Gus finish that story, I'm going to give you all a surprise. Only 10% of the folks at Caledonia are Scot. Now, you wouldn't think that, but let's hear how this has happened, because it is a model for what's going on all over the country, where we're moving from very narrow communities for senior care to very wide communities. But when it starts that way, it can be very impersonal. This is not the case here. So, and you may be interested in understanding this as you choose communities for yourself or your family members. So on that fateful fire day, all the way back in the beginning of World War I, Scott, what decisions were made by the leaders at that time that really has informed it to this day?
You know, the morning after this tragic fire, the chairman of our board at the time, John Williamson was his name, he summoned his entire board to stand over the dying embers of this fire. And as the steam, the smoke was still rising, he said something incredible, words that have resonated through the years until today. He said, "The Scottish home must not die in its own ashes. It must always be a monumental tribute to the best qualities of the Scots." And why the power in those words comes when you really dig down and look at them. He's not saying that this community is for people who were born in Scotland or have Scottish heritage. He's talking about the best qualities of the Scots. He's identifying values. And the values that he identified were home, family, a relief of the distressed, and a willingness to reimagine the traditions that we've had. And wouldn't you know, 12 months after the home was destroyed and they stood over it the next morning, the home was rebuilt and the residents moved back into their home. This was in the middle of the First World War, an incredible period of philanthropy that supported this community. So I'm so very proud that at that moment we pivoted, and we now welcome everyone who is Scottish by birth, by heritage, or simply by inclination. We are a very kind of Scottish feeling community. If you walked in from the street today, you would find a community that looks and feels like it's a country home built in the borders of Scotland, where I'm from. But everybody that's here finds a welcome, and everybody recognizes that the spirit of family and home and love are really what make the place unique. Can I perhaps say one thing about the first question you asked?
Sure.
If I could, Adrian, you asked how, and I want to recognize that we made an investment in philosophy, in technology, in PPE, in our people, and in our shared purpose. But there is an element of luck. There must always be an element of luck in the grace of a higher power. But I return again and again and again and say it's the vigilance of the people who live and work here that have delivered the safety, the impeccable record of safety that we have.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thing to remember. And there is an element of luck. I've felt that myself. I've moved from New Jersey to California. My listeners know that. We stopped one day in, I think, 8 or 9 different states in different hotels. And so far, so good. And there's been an element of luck. But that does not discount the fact that we took a tremendous amount of care. And I ask everyone to do that. And as I close out, I have to say one thing to you, Gus. Every year, for many, many, many years, we've spent 2 weeks in Edinburgh. And I actually went to school there a little bit during one of my college summers. So
right?
I'm very fond of the Scots. I'm very fond of the country. And what do? We go to the Edinburgh Festival. And I was very, very sad this year, I must say, that whole festival, which has has 3,000 plays during their month period. And I try to see as many as I can. But, of course, the whole thing was canceled. So
you know, there
I
was
hope,
a wonderful thing they do at Hogmanay at New Year in Edinburgh. The world's largest celebration of New Year happens on the streets of Edinburgh. Of course, they couldn't do it this year. So
right. The
organizers did something incredible, and I'd encourage you to look at it. To the words of the poet laureate of Scotland, who actually has just written a poem for Caledonia Senior Living. She wrote this incredible poem about what it means to be Scottish in the world today, and it was written in the skies by the largest display of drones in the UK, all over Scotland. It was breathtaking.
Well, that's the kind of thing that happens. The Edinburgh Festival is sort of catching, and so I'm not surprised. And I'm going to tell all of you, as I always do, be careful, but get out there, kids, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
Okay. Now, Stu, do they have a PR person on listening?
They weren't on, but they have
a PR. Oh, they do. Okay. So this may not be for you, Gus, but what we do now is, of course, it does air. It does go on the front page of our webinar, of our website, and it goes on to, you know, iTunes and Google Podcasts.
Wonderful.
And all the usual
Thank
disseminators.
You.
But the other thing that we do is we take about 2 minutes of your words, which we'll pick out, and they light up on because of a little technology we have, and it becomes a video. And then we send that to you, and you can send it to your PR people or marketing people, and they can put it on YouTube or social media or anything of that nature. So it's really nice. And we post it also. We post it also. So that was wonderful. I mean,
thank you, Adrian.
It was just a great conversation. There's something you may, I don't know if you've ever read a book called Positive Deviance. Positive Deviance.
I love it already. I haven't. But
yeah. You should look at it. There's an institute at Tufts University, and I didn't have time to mention it because I really wanted you to be heard, but I talk about it a lot on the show. The Sternins were sent to Vietnam to solve the problem of child hunger in certain communities, and they had no budget. So what did they do? They studied the children who were not hungry and how the mothers were feeding them under the same circumstances as other mothers, and they saw what they were doing, and they were doing things differently. And they used them as the spokesperson to help the other mothers learn how to feed their children. And they stamped out the child hunger in 8 communities. Now, it seems to me that your group is a positive deviant. In other words, you do things differently, but in a positive way. And they that book also talks about Mercer and why in certain healthcare organizations people wash their hands and why they don't. And it's fascinating stuff for any leader. But you read it. I think that you may be able to speak to some of those things that you did and maybe positively help some other organizations. Now, do you ever go to Leading Age, the big conference?
I do, yeah, I do.
Well, I just saw that they were asking for January 25th. They had a deadline if you wanted to make a presentation in October in Atlanta. So if anybody in your organization is planning to go there, that would be a really good presentation for Leading Age, which would be, you know, how you did it and the positive deviance that they could maybe get from this.
I love that. The we have our vaccines coming on Tuesday next week. Walgreens are delivering them, and I tend to make everything into a story whenever I can. We got the news about the vaccines on a couple of days before New Year, and I'd been talking about the vaccines as if they, you know, were symbolically light flickering when we heard about them through the FDA's approval, and then the light got brighter when the first shipment arrived in Illinois, and it got brighter again. And I realized we got the news about them on the winter solstice, on the shortest and darkest day of the year. And Dylan, of course, Bob Dylan said, they say the darkest hour comes right before the dawn. And symbolically, every day after that becomes longer and lighter. And not only did it feel right because of that, but literally it was the day the Christmas star was shining and planets were literally aligned in the sky above Chicago. I went home and told my wife this story, and she said, well, when are your dates? I said, the 12th of January. And we looked at one another and realized we have two sons, one called Langston after Langston Hughes, and that's Langston's birthday, January the 12th. 3 weeks later, we get our second booster, or our first booster, on February the 2nd, which is our other son, Bobby's birthday, Bobby after Robert Burns.
Yeah, maybe. That's what you, by the way, when you said the poet laureate of Scotland, I said, oh, Robbie Burns. But no, you meant the current poet laureate of Scotland.
Yeah, Jackie Cage, she's great.
Very good.
One other quick story. I went to Stirling University, and I studied... signed up to do accountancy, quickly discovered I was neither good at it nor interested in it, was much more interested in social anthropology, so made my way through the business department and as quickly as I could towards sociology. And when the music stopped after 4 years, I ended up with a joint degree in human resource management and sociology. My graduation, I got a letter from the principal of the university, and the letter said, congratulations, Mr. Noble, you have pursued the most deviant degree program I have ever seen.
deviant. Tell me what the name of that was, what the degree actually was, social?
I got a joint degree in human resource management and sociology.
Got it. Okay, human resource management.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I thank you very much, and we will get you all the information on how you can promote the show. And the only thing we ask is that you tell as many people as possible, because we want people to know the show is here. Okay?
We will. Thank you for doing what you're doing.
Thank
I hope
you.
You're well and continue to be well.
So far, so good. Take care.
There we go. Thanks.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.